So I'm going to hand over now to Tegan, who's the first presenter. She'll tell you a little bit about herself and then get into her topic area. Thank you, Tegan.
Good afternoon. My name is Tegan Kolesnik, as mentioned, and this is part of my Master of Creative Arts research, which is called a Transglobal Search for Identity. And I guess just to sort of launch into it, I just wanted to think about today most of us are using the internet regularly for our shopping, whether it's goods, services, or foods, anything. But back in 1997, e-commerce was only just emerging, and few people even knew of sites like Amazon. And that just seems amazing because it's not that long ago. So for these very early users of the internet, who were mostly, I guess, geeks and hackers and programmers, they were interested in forming communities, and that's what the internet was actually originally about. And communities such as the Well in the States or MICE, multi-user dungeons. And so their focus was on identity and community. So what's my topic about? Well, it asks whether our identities can be shaped to communities and cultures that we don't physically inhabit. And what really constitutes a local? We've got such a huge rapid growth of the internet, and it's becoming part of everybody's life, whether we really like it or not. And many of our identities are starting to be increasingly plugged into this cyberspace. And it's becoming a place where we can actually start formulating identities, beliefs, cultures, and communities. So when I say local, what exactly do I mean by a local? Well, I live in Coogee. I've lived there for about 20 years, and I go to the local shops, and I know quite a lot of the shopkeepers. I go to a local dog park with my dog, and I know most of the dog owners there, and I'm wondering if I can actually create that sense of local online. I can walk my dog in Second Life, that's a given, we can do that. I can chat with other dog owners on dog sites, and there's billions of them out there. And online, I can actually choose who I want to talk to. Unlike, say, the dog park, where I have to talk to the person whose dog comes up and sniffs my dog's bum. So is online a safer place? Can we actually start looking at it as being a safer place to form a community? For example, if I join an online community, I actually have to abide by certain rules. And if I break them, well, I get banished from that community. And I was kind of thinking about this, and I thought, well, similar kind of banishment would mean maybe I go to prison. So it's quite a sort of strong reason not to kind of break the rules in these environments. Rodney Harrison from, this is a recent lecture podcast I found, and he talks about the internet. I'll just quickly play you this little grab I got. Hopefully. I forgot to set the levels, sorry.
But virtual worlds are dictated by rules in the same way that the real world is dictated by rules. And in many ways, those rules are much stricter in the virtual world because all it would take is the company that owns that virtual world to pull the plug on it, and it doesn't exist anymore. So there is a kind of fragility to a virtual existence which doesn't mirror the
real world. So basically, you got that gist of it there. He just sort of talked about how you can run around naked in cyber worlds. But the critical thing there is he's saying that is that you know there are these strict guidelines. Terry Flew speaks a lot about culture and community and speaks about it as a lived and shared experience. And he's talking about it in the anthropological sense of a lived and shared experience, in that it's everyday practices and everyday groups, and this is in our first life environment. So can I create an identity, a community, a culture without this real place, without being fully embodied, without face-to-face experiences? I quite like this quote here from Mark Twain, and obviously he doesn't think he can. So I spoke briefly to start with about you know, the beginnings of the internet, and really 1992, the internet started to occur to more people's homes, to the home PC. And it also, I mean, as I said before, it's really the hackers, the programmers, and the nerds who are really getting into it. But it started to go to homes, and it started to be, there started to be the building of communities. And you can see there, I bolded a bit there, it says it has become a virtual community in and of itself. So from these early days, this was how people were seeing the internet being. Harold Reingold was a leading journalist in those early days of the internet, and in 1993 he wrote the virtual community, which he basically builds on the belief that we can maintain and build relationships with community in cyberspace. Reingold notes that communication technologies have actually been changing communities for about 10,000 years, whether it be the alphabet or the internet. Ajahn Apadurai also believes in communities no longer being centered around this traditional meaning of the local. He believes we need to find new ways to think about ethnography in the deterritorialized world. And much has been written and talked about place-based communities today not meeting the needs of individuals, whether we're becoming isolated in our McMansions. You know, questions around the failings of neighborhood relationships. I mean, do you know your neighbor's name? Do you know anything about your neighbor? So Axman asks, is this the beginning of the erosion of localism and tradition and the start of the global cultural homogeneity? In 1983, Benedict Anderson coined the phrase imagined communities. And this described communities that were formed without actual face-to-face contact. So in 2009, Tristram Madelak came about and described it as imagined world. And this is to emphasize the advancement of our technology. perhaps with the development of better avatars, more face-to-face contact, for example, chat roulette, we can actually see a future where identities can grow and participate in cyberspace community similar to us we are surviving and building our identities in our real communities. I guess my question is, can I walk my dog online and have the same sort of experience as I can walking my virtual dog online and my dog in the real dog park? I've got two small video vignettes now to play, and luckily we know the sound's going to work. The first one is a woman who believes in the realness of a life in Second Life, where she feels that she is definitely part of a community. The second person is John, and he spends a lot of time online, but doesn't know if he can really get that sense of realness in online.
Well, there's so many things to do in Second Life. In terms of community and culture, there are ways of sharing information with people. There are many stratas to the life in there. It is online. You can turn it off whenever you like, so there is that element of distance. But I think it's because you make real connections with people, real people, realize it's not pretend, it's not role play. You get to know them, and you do feel part of a community. And you can go and do things like see a film with someone if you want to. You can see art together. I was standing in a gallery talking to someone from Iowa about a painting. And we were both discussing the same painting. We were looking at it at the same time. That's real.
I spend probably, 4 to 8 hours a day in virtual relation with people. Okay. What I found on this sliding scale is that regardless of your level of mediation, it's still possible to take some of your energized being and share it with another. You know, it may just be an IRC chat, you focus your attention on that other, at the end of that other end of that long mediated pathway, you can give some of your lived energy to them. So you have that possibility. It's only a problem is that the infrastructure between you and them is tapping off a large piece of that energy. So if you want to have sort of more full exchange of energies, you really need to be localized.
So the second part of my research question is around diasporas and the connectivity with digital media, particularly the internet. A recent paper by Tristan Madela questions the extent information technology does keep people in touch. And he poses several questions around whether this integrates the diaspora in their country of residence and in their country of origin. And his key question, I guess, that which interests me is what makes a diaspora today with our information technology? My research is going to consider these hybrid cultural communities and their connectivity, and once again think about whether these create safer, stronger communities and better constructed to meet hybrid cultural needs. I guess some of this stems from my own recent connection to another culture. In Germany, my great-great-grandfather was a Sorb, which is a tiny minority group in East Germany on the border of the Czech Republic and Poland. And in 2008, I went over there to meet some of the Sorbs and film them. And I was very much welcomed into that community. In fact, my surname, Kosi, is quite a well-known Sorbian last name. And my friend, Peter, sent me these photos. I've kept a constant kind of relationship between a few of the people that I met via email, websites, sending pictures, video, vignettes and stuff. And he sent me this because this is a village that he took me to that I'd been to in summer. And he sent me this to last winter, or his winter, to say, oh, this is what it looks like in summer. And so I asked him just before I came here, how do you say it feels good to have a connection? And that's it there. I'm not even going to attempt that, okay? Andrew could probably attempt that. It's actually Serbian to Slavic language, very similar to any Slavic or Czech and Polish. So what interests me then also is these ideas of these hybrid virtual communities. And two researchers, Nauret and Hoyte, have coined this phrase, the hybrid virtual community, and that is overlapping the online and offline communications and relationships. And their studies have found that many communities based in real and virtual spaces are actually stronger, more sustainable, and more supportive. So these sorts of communities can gain an awful lot from having an online community and offline community. So they quote Macmillan and Chavez here to emphasize those connections between the diasporic groups. And they speak. They take that then one step further to look at how these bonds are even strengthened with the online community as well. They also state that these communities tend to have a stronger feeling of trust amongst them, and this being because they've got those established boundaries both online and offline. This picture in the background is the same area that I took. It's a traditional Serbian farmhouse in the summer. But there are others among particularly Karam, who state that this ongoing connectivity to country and origin leads to a less integrated society in the country of residence. For example, thoughts around less civic participation outside the community, perceptions of threat outside the community, because it's starting to become this homogenized culture. So there's both sides of that discussion. And I started to think about these ideas of the virtual community and the pros and cons of it and start weighing it up. So I made a little graph here, which you probably can't see very well, but I printed out some of these people one later. But just to quickly look at some of the things that I've already addressed, the whole homogenized community, I guess, is going to always be a con. But then we can look at the aspects of being free from geography and not attached to that terra firma and being able to still have these relationships and communities without it, as stated there by William Mitchell from the City of Beach. The loss of physical contact, I mean, is always going to, you're not going to ever get that online in an online community. But then, say, educational tool, and one bit here that I guess really strikes for me is the mention there of Jahal, who I have actually filmed, and he's on my blog site, which I'll show the address of later if you want to have a look. And he was born in a Lebanese refugee camp, and when he came to Australia, came here with very much a Lebanese accent, didn't really speak any very well Arabic or write it. And his, since the last 6 years, been spending time online and actually learning to read and write Arabic. But not only that, he's been going into chat rooms, and his Palestinian friends are actually trying to help him with his accent, to give him more of a Palestinian accent. So my methodology is, I'm going to be looking at case studies, obviously, and commentary from researchers. The first and production of the first and second life, and the ethnic communities, as I mentioned, particularly those that are marginalised or in smaller settlements. I'm going to look at this idea of the shrinking spaces and the impacts of the local and global village, and analyse these ideas about shared lived and shared experience. The structure will be face-to-face interviews and theorising shared meanings around the norms and codes set in cyberspace, and develop these concepts of enemy, which refers to tensions or normless situations which many of these people would be living in. So in conclusion, is cyberspace a place to go form a community and an identity? I can choose who I speak with, I flirt with, connect with, I can maintain strong boundaries. Plus, the internet allows me to have more social contact than my real life most of the time. 50% of people in the UK have a social relationship, and I'm sure that number's probably under what's real. Real identities and online identities intersect in these ideas of this hybrid virtual community. And another really key part of this is, what is the social impact that this is going to have on society? You know, will we have a greater sense of community? Or will I have some dual sense of belonging and not know who I am? Stronger sense of community, or more opportunity to express myself, wider circle of friends? Or could I end up with this addiction to an online relationship to the detriment of my real one? Rango states there, is the virtualization of human relationships unhealthy? So can I belong in the dog park both online and offline? And just lastly, this is actually on the website, it's actually a blog site, so if anyone ever wants to go and have a look and comment, as I said, Jahal's on there, and also on there is that building here? Yep. So this is kind of what it looks like. And there's more maps, the mind maps I've got, so just down the side here. These are some ideas of some readings that I've, and I just write little bits about stuff that's coming out of those readings. Just down the bottom here is sort of these vignettes, a couple of you've seen today. And so this is Jahal here. And this is chat roulette, so I've started speaking to some people about chat roulette. And there's a list of references of anybody that I've referenced today on the front table here, and also a map. Thank you very much.